If people want to mingle in, they can. We're miking this because they have to record it, so it's not so you can hear it. So if you can't hear us, let us know, you know, or you can just move up, right? Because there's lots of seats here, you know. I'm Jason Lee. I'm the digital innovation pastor here at Northwoods. And I had a panel of two other guys joining us, but one of the guys got sick this morning and isn't here. So it's just Chris and me. So we get to have a tech talk with Chris and myself. And so I am the digital innovation pastor here at Northwoods. I've been on staff now 15 and a half years, which is kind of crazy. And I served in the IT department as an IT director for about, I don't know, all but one of those years, I guess, and started this new role coming out of COVID as digital innovation pastor. And so people ask, what does the digital innovation pastor do? And I said, I don't know, I haven't figured it out yet. But really, it's my job is a digital project manager for our organization. And so as ministries want to do things in our mobile app or online, I get to help them figure out how to do that and help solve some of those problems. So that's what I get to do on a day-to-day basis. And then I've asked Chris to join us. And Chris, why don't you tell them a little about yourself?
Okay. Chris Serino. Unlike Jason, I'm not on staff here, but I have been in the IT industry now for going on 15 years. I did 13 years at Caterpillar, and now I'm coming up on 2 years at Amazon Web Services, the cloud, if you want to call it that. So kind of a background in IT. I won't bore you with all of those details, but a mixed bag, a little bit of everything. And now in my current role, I'm helping companies as they migrate their data centers and look for the latest and greatest solutions for their projects and things that they work on. I guess more a little bit more relevant for here. I am a volunteer. I've done numerous volunteer roles over the years here, including stuff with small groups, playing keyboard in our worship band, things like that. And then I have four little kids that are up and coming. My oldest is 8, and then I have a 5-year-old and twin 3-year-olds. So I'm on the young spectrum for kids, kind of looking to the future. So I do have some experience here, but I'm also learning from my peers and those around me. And I think the other guy that was Eric that was going to join us, he's got some older kids too. We've talked and learned from him. So by no means is this a one-way conversation. I'm definitely learning from you all as well.
Yep. So yeah, I have two boys, 13 and 10. And Eric was going to join us this morning as well. He's a parent of middle school and high school students, and he got sick this morning and said, I got to stay home. I said, well, we'll appreciate you staying home since you're sick. So I want you to, real quick, if you'll scan the QR code or if you want to type in the URL, if you'll take a quick survey and as we get started here, I'm curious, did anyone do it before we started? Yeah, so on that note, so there's a QR code just sitting up on the screen, and some of you saw that it said to scan, and you just walked up and scanned it, but you didn't know what it was. So I'm just saying, you know, you should be cautious about QR codes. We were reading an article the other day, and it's you have no idea where that QR code is going to take you or what's behind that QR code, and especially for your children. If they have a mobile device or a phone, it's fun to scan the QR codes, right? But you have no idea what's going to await you after the back of that QR code. And so we just had that up when we walked in just to see who would scan it. But go ahead and scan it. There really is a legitimate form behind it that we'd like to get some of your feedback on and of some of the things we're talking about. But we did really just want to caution you on QR codes. And a lot of today of what we're planning to do is just open a conversation with you. You guys, a couple seats over here, come on in. And really encourage you to, if you can't hear, you have to move up. I mean, we're talking pretty loud as it is up here, so you might have to move up. And these mics are only for the camera, so sorry. And so what we want to do is open a dialogue and a conversation with you guys this morning about just technology in your home, and really help you to have a dialogue with your kids, an ongoing dialogue. Technology dialogues in the home are not a one and done. And it is not a single conversation that you have with your kids and, hey, we're good. We've talked about it once and they're good to go. It really is an ongoing conversation. And, looking at some of the results here, 5 of the 15 that have filled it out say you have a good handle on technology in the home. Some of you have had conversations with your kids. About half of you have content filters. Half of you don't have content filters. I didn't expect this to be refreshing and updating as I'm trying to read it. This is unique here. Yeah, I did not expect this. Parental controls, about three-fourths of you have some parental controls on the kids' devices. A quarter of you not familiar with kids' parental controls. Screen time limits. Nobody's letting their kids on their device for 10 hours a day. What's up with that? Come on now. 2, 4, and 6 are ranked that way. A couple people haven't thought about screen limits, and that's okay. We'll talk about that. And then last question. Yeah. So we'll talk about that first. Turning 13, that's a unique thing in the tech industry. So your children are considered adults when they turn 13 when it comes to Facebook and Fitbit and Google accounts and all those things. In fact, with their health accounts, if you have a MyChart for your kids, when they turn 13, you have to ask permission to have access to that MyChart now. That's a lot of fun come around COVID and your family goes and gets COVID tests and you can go read your 10-year-old's test results. But your 13-year-old who doesn't have a MyChart account yet, right, you can't get his results without his permission. And so you have to go to the doctor and you have to sign a piece of paper and allow him to give you permission to see his COVID test results. That's a lot of fun. If you have a Google account for your kid, maybe you've set up Gmail for whatever reason. When they turn 13, whatever parental controls you had turned on for them, they don't matter anymore unless the child gives you permission to have those parental controls turned on their account. So 13's the magic age when it comes to tech accounts. You're not supposed to have a Gmail account or a Fitbit account or a Facebook account or all those things before a child's 13, but you can choose whatever year, right? And kind of fudge that and it kind of works. But when they hit that magic 13-year-old age, a lot of things kick in. And so that was one thing that hit our family this year. And in fact, Google sends me an email and says, hey, your son is now 13. He has no longer has a managed account. And I'm like, hold on, time out. Who made that decision, right? But that's really something that you should be aware of as your kids are making that, crossing that 13-year-old threshold. The tech industry thinks they're now old enough to, you know, that's their data and they own it. And parents have to ask their permission. So I would encourage you as you're looking at those type of things to be aware of that. So a real fun story. You know, one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is technology has consequences, good, bad, and otherwise, right? Jonathan, my oldest, got a Fitbit several years ago, and this was really before Fitbit was allowing kids under 13 to have a Fitbit. So I kind of fudged his age so he was a little bit older so he could have a Fitbit account. And he brings his tablet to me one day and he says, hey, Dad, can you fix this? And I thought, oh, well, what have we done? And I look at my son's screen and his screen name on Fitbit is Poop Lee. And I said, why is your name Poop Lee? And he goes, well, I went into the profile and it said I could change my name and I thought it would be fun to change my name to Poop Lee. Well, what he didn't realize is you only can change your name on Fitbit every 60 days. Don't know why 60 days, it seems kind of rare anyways. But his public display name on Fitbit was Poop Lee. And so we got to have a fun conversation about there are consequences of the decisions that we make online. And so I had to spend the next 10 to 20 minutes figuring out how do I now not display his name on Fitbit, but to display his login name instead. So for the next 60 days, he doesn't get seen by grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle and all his friends on Fitbit as Poop Lee. And so one of the things that we wanted to just talk about today was just how do you have some of these age-appropriate conversations with your children about the consequences that there is online? Obviously, as digital innovation pastor and IT director formerly, I think technology has a great place for what we do in the kingdom. It has great use for furthering the gospel. It has great use for us in our homes. There's great things that can be done with technology to further our children's education. There's good with technology, right? But there's also a lot of things that aren't. And having those conversations is helpful. So, Chris, you were talking about some of the consequences that you know you've talked about with your kids. Why don't you share a bit about that?
Yeah, I guess we can kick it off with another funny story there. And this doesn't have public consequences, but just, you know, technology spans a wide array of devices, programs, applications, whatever, right? So there's Fitbit, and then there's now devices listening and seeing into your home, right? Like phones. Maybe you have an Alexa, maybe you have Google devices, whatever. We do have a couple Alexas around the house. A lot of times I'll keep them muted or off, you know, and cameras covered and things like that. So it's only on when we want it on and we kind of control that. But a little while ago, my kids were a little bit younger. We didn't have it off at the time. My son comes running through the room, you know, just saying whatever. Well, it kicks off the Alexa and it says, "Would you like to order a woman?" And I'm like, "No, no, we don't." You know, to my knowledge, you can't do that on shopping on Amazon. But I didn't want to see where that was going. And that made me really aware, wow, they're not even talking to it, but it picks it up. It kind of infers whatever it wants out of that gibberish. And you could end up where you don't, in places you don't want to be, rather quickly. And that's with parental controls on, right? So no, they can't actually spend money on my account or through that device, but who knows what that could have pulled up or where that could have gone, especially if your son or daughter's older. So you just have to stay vigilant and hyper aware of what's going on and be invested in your children and having these conversations and learning the technology. And I just kind of sidetracked myself. What were we actually wanting to talk about there?
Consequences.
Yes. So my kids are young. So we don't have, I haven't engaged in the level of consequences and discussions that you might have if your kids are entering their teenage years, if they're getting their own accounts at 13. When my oldest son turned 7, I think, he got a Amazon Fire tablet from grandma, right? She asked us first. It was okay. But before he got it, I went in and I said, okay, what is a Fire tablet? What does it do? What's it capable of? What parental controls are in place? And what do I need to do in my house to secure that and make sure it's a positive experience for my son and a learning experience, something we can do together, and it doesn't become a negative thing? So I did a lot of research ahead of time, invested that time, told grandma, yes, it's okay. I'm comfortable with how I can control it, what we can do. And then when my son got it, of course, we let him open it, have a little fun, things like that. And then we sat down and had a conversation. Here's the rules. Here's how you can earn trust with us. Yes, he was only 7 at the time, but you know, we talked about screen time. We talked about what kind of things he could do. You know, he could read books on there. He could play a couple games that I install, but we're not, you know, especially being in school now, he is school age, so he does have friends whose parents are a little bit more relaxed than maybe we are. So he comes back saying, well, why can't I use YouTube? Why can't I watch Netflix? Well, because I can't see what you're doing, and I don't know what's going on. You can use the apps that we approve for now. As he earns trust, maybe he can expand what he can do on that tablet, and we can grow with time leading up to 13, where we have other discussions and things along the way. But this is a continuous conversation. And so far, with my child in that age, he's doing a really good job. He is earning trust. He's having fun. One thing I like to tell my kids and others when they ask, you know, there's, and it's biblical, right? There's freedom within boundaries. I use that example with my kids for playing outside, right? Our backyard has a fence. And I'm like, there is freedom within that fence. I can see you. You can do whatever you can throw balls, you can kick balls, throw frisbees, run, jump, scream, whatever you want to do. You cross that fence, you go outside the gate, you can get hit by cars, you got to deal with people that you may or may not know, walking on the sidewalk, driving by, there's dogs that can come up, whatever. It becomes a little bit more uncontrolled. Now, maybe you're just in the front yard, it's a positive experience, maybe you're with mom and dad, right? Being with mom and dad is different in the front yard or on the sidewalk or on the road than being without mom and dad. Same with technology. So in the backyard, total freedom. When you're using your tablet in the way we prescribe, you have freedom. You can use your hour of time or 2 hours, however long you give your kid. You can use your apps. You can have fun. You go outside that boundary, you can run into danger. You can run into consequences, positive or bad. Maybe it's just a username. Maybe it's just a harmless little gibberish on the Alexa, whatever. But you go outside of that. Now you need mom and dad to watch and establish new boundaries and be with you, right? So I guess that's an example. That's one way I am teaching my kids. It's one thing they understand because they play in the backyard. They use the fences. And this virtual world is all, you know, just they don't understand it yet. So that kind of brings a concrete example to them.
Yeah. So when we say boundaries, you know, part of that's time, part of that's age appropriateness. And, you know, for our kids, we've had a lot of conversations about how they're going to use technology in our home. And at the end of the day, I pay for the internet. And so I get to say and make the rules on what you can and cannot do. And guess what? I've paid for most of the devices in my house. So I get to make the say of what we can and cannot do. And we've had that conversation, but then I also said, part of the reason why I'm setting these boundaries and saying that now is so that you can be a healthy human being when you're making the decisions on your own. And if I expect you to just make that up and figure that out on your own, then like many things in life, you're not able to make the best decision or a healthy decision. And so early on, we started having conversations with our boys about, hey, when we're using our devices, there may be times that you find that you are seeing things that don't feel like they're appropriate. Or you may come across something, albeit accidentally, that it isn't consistent with what we've taught about in our home. There are going to be pictures, there's going to be images, there's going to be words or phrases that we don't use. And if you come across those, let's talk about that. And so rather than saying, shame on you, don't you dare, or don't you ever go look at this, it's, hey, it's likely you're going to stumble across this. Mom and dad have. I've searched for something and all of a sudden it's like, oh my goodness, close my laptop. This is not where I thought I was going to be. And having those honest conversations with our kids that even as an adult, I end up places on the internet that I've never intended to be. And it's not where I want to be, but it's okay to close the laptop and put it away and say, I'm going to step away from that. And, you know, even my 10-year-old a couple of weeks ago, he was playing a game and it infuriates me, the ads that come up on some of these games. And we've had to have conversations with them of, hey guys, if this game has a lot of ads that we find to be inappropriate, we're just not going to play the game no matter how fun it is, because we're not going to fill our minds and our hearts with this junk and take our minds and our hearts to places that's not okay. And my 10-year-old brings his tablet to me and he's holding it like this. And he says, Dad, I think there's something inappropriate on the screen. And sure enough, it was a man and a woman under the covers in a bed, and the thought bubbles are saying things about, you know, hey, do you think anybody's going to, you know, discover us or notice us? Or does anybody know what's going on? And he's like, I don't know what that means. And I was like, I don't know what that means. And I don't know why I don't even know what they're advertising. But then using that as a conversation to say, you know what, buddy, God has intended for some things to happen between a mom and a dad and not between other people. And this is promoting outside of what God's will is for our lives. And I'm so proud of you for bringing this to me and letting us have this conversation. Now, do my kids bring every crazy ad to me? No. But when they do, I praise them for saying, hey, you recognize this is not what we've talked about as being part of who we are as a family. And let's have a conversation rather than shame on you. Why did you? How did you? Where did this? I'm destroying this app right now. You know, and so that particular app we've chosen to leave on. And we've said to Nathan, hey, if that ad comes up anymore, we're probably going to have to start to either limit that app or uninstall it. But, you know, let us know when those type of things come up. And they've been really good about that. And I think, you know, part of that is giving the freedom to our kids to say, hey, I need you to help me police this. And here are the boundaries that we need to put in place. And it gives them some authority on what they're doing. And they can help also bring that to us. Now, there has to be conversations that get them to a point where we're all comfortable with that. You know, early on, or still do it now, with our Xbox, you're not allowed to play our Xbox in our house without someone else. That's just a family rule that we have. I'm not saying that, you know, you have to follow my family rules, but this is where we, you know, as a young man, I was a gaming addict. I kid you not. I could play two or three seasons of NCAA football in a weekend. Not just a few games, seasons, recruiting, games, coaching, all the things that went around it. And I would lose 12, 15 hours of a weekend and just be completely oblivious of it. And so, you know, for us in our home, we're not going to set up my kids to in an environment where just time disappears. And so if you want to play Xbox, you have to either play with me or you have to play with brother, or there's a couple friends that we let them play Rocket League online together with. And that's just how it is in our home. If you're going to play the Xbox, you're playing with someone else. It's an experience with someone else on the couch together. In most of the games that we do are two player games, just for the fact that if you're going to do any sort of technology or gaming, it's going to be with another human being and you're going to have some sort of interaction. Now, the catch with that is those games also most have chat and they have interaction with third parties. And so we've said, look, you can't play with anyone in a game that you don't know in real life. If mom and dad don't know who these human beings are, you may not play with them. And for many of the games, we actually say, look, the chat has to stay turned off. We're not going to allow chat to be on because I'm not saying that you're going to say something inappropriate. I'm not saying that you're going to do something wrong, but I can't control what's coming in through that chat, let alone who that's coming from. And so we put a lot of boundaries around the games that our kids play and what's happening in game. And so I'm fairly familiar with most of the games that they're playing and how they operate, and not so much the technology, but what's the concept that's going on here. I mean, Slither.io, I don't know if you've ever played that game. It's about making the longest snake and going up and eating other, circling around other snakes and eating the pieces that fly apart when the snakes die. But for some reason, there's a crazy chat that goes on in that game. And so, just being aware of what's going on in game and what are you handing your children, when not only are you handing them a device that has a game on it, but what else is coming with that game, and being aware of that. And so part of that's just setting boundaries and having those conversations.
Yeah, that brings up a couple of good points. One, Gary just a few minutes ago said, model that behavior with your children, right? Reading the Bible, model reading the Bible, show them what you value in your home. And the same is true with technology, right? We have to model that behavior with our children. So how much screen time do you have? You know, I think Jason has a stat here he can share in a minute, but how much screen time do you have? Are you walking around the house buried in your phone all day, or are you paying attention to your children and your spouse? Do you have transparency with your spouse? You know, you want access to your children's devices. Does your spouse have access to yours, and vice versa? Do you model that transparency? Do you have those conversations with your spouse? Hey, something came up. Eric gave an example when we were talking before this, where, you know, the doctor told him something. He came home and Googled it and went, oh, hey, wife, I didn't mean this. I was Googling something from the doctor, you know, so you can end up places you don't want to be. But model that transparency for your children. Model that screen time. Like Jason, I spent many hours playing video games as a child. Most of those in our day were playing the game at home, disconnected from the internet. Wasn't as big of a deal as it is today, where you have to monitor a little bit closer. But now I have realized the healthy balance. And so if I play a game here or there, it is with a friend or a family member for a limited time. My kids know that. Most of the time now I don't play video games. And when I do, it's with my kids with the limited time. But I'm modeling that behavior. And it's a social activity. It's fun. It's meant to help them develop a little bit, explore creativity, I guess, and have some fun there. Yeah. But you have to have those healthy boundaries.
Along with it, just access to devices. Our family rule is no tablets in the bedrooms, no computers in the bedroom, nothing with a screen in your bedroom, especially with the door closed. My phone is my alarm clock, and so that's one of the few exceptions. But, charging of devices either literally is a cord that comes out and sits in the hallway, or the devices are getting charged on a stand in mom and dad's room. And, there's been a lot of pushback of, well, why can't I do my homework on my tablet? My math curriculum's on my tablet. I'm just doing my math. Well, buddy, our family rule is that no devices are in your bedroom. And if you'd like to do your math, you can do that in the living room. You can do that in the hallway. You can do that anywhere that's accessible. And so I'll ask the question, where's your home computer? Where are your devices in your house? Do you know where all the screens in your house are? And quite frankly, as a young man, I had just a season of life that I was struggling with pornography. And, I don't want to set my children up in an environment where I'm putting that kind of crack in front of my kids without any sort of thought behind it. So Natalie, I've just talked about that, if we're going to use screens, and that's for mom and dad, we're going to do that in a place that's public so that people can see what's going on. There's a lot more ways now to hide that kind of stuff than there were when I was in middle school. The fact was my parents were ignorant. It was my way of hiding things. I could hide a lot of things back then. I would say now, if you're noticing your kids are using an incognito tab for about anything on their device, I would be asking some questions. The purpose of an incognito tab is, once you close it, the history is gone. Anything that happened in that browser window, there's supposed to be no evidence on the device that just happened on that device. And so, whether it's privacy tab or incognito tab, the different browsers have different names for it. It's basically Snapchat for the internet. The whole concept behind Snapchat is what? That your pictures disappear, supposedly, right? They're gone forever, supposedly. They're not. But supposedly those things are gone. gone after a few seconds. Well, what's the, you know, when you get to a real point of it, what is the point of an application that I can take a picture and that the pictures are gone after a period of time? What's the, you know, what's the root of why my child is using an incognito tab? As a developer, as an IT professional, there's real legitimate reasons mm-hmm. for using an incognito tab. There's not a lot of reasons for a 13 to 17 year old child on the internet using an incognito tab. And so I would just caution that, you know, that's something to be aware of. You know, how are your children using their devices? Where are they using their devices? If you're not, I would be perusing the browser history on your devices periodically. Have an idea of where your kids have been. You know, my kids' devices on their Google account is currently logged in as me. So the search history goes to my account. And so I can look at the search history across any of my devices from my computer at any point in time. Whereas if I choose to log them into their Google account on Chrome, that search history goes to their device, their account, and I have to go look for it. And part of it is just we've set up some guidelines for our family. When you're using these devices, this is how we're going to do it. And could they go and do something differently? Sure. But we've also said, hey, you know, having your tablet is a privilege. Having the ability to play the Xbox is a privilege. And so you can earn that currency back or you can lose that currency. And so I think part of, what is the mindset in your home? Do your students, your children think, man, this is mine. This is my cell phone and I get to do what I want with it? Or is this a device that it's a currency that you're earning in our home to use? I would just encourage you, where are the screens being used in your home and at what time of day and what location in your home? You know, my wife has unlocked all of my devices except for my corporate laptop for the fact that that's what our IT policy says, right? And I'm an administrator of our domain, so I can't really give her that login, right? But I have other controls that are in place corporately that monitor this. But for my phone, her fingerprint unlocks all my devices intentionally. At any point in time, if my wife wants to walk up and pick up any of my devices and unlock it, she's game to do that. The flip side is my kids' fingerprints do not unlock my devices. And I would encourage you, what are the parental controls you've put in place to protect your own devices? Even recently, I was a young man who ordered, I think, $1,400 worth of furniture from Amazon for his parents. And the parents didn't even know. All of a sudden, Amazon boxes of furniture started showing up at their, maybe it was $4,000, furniture just started showing up at their house because the kid unlocked mom and dad's phone and decided they needed some new furniture that they were going to order. And so, what devices do they have access to? What context do they have access to? You know, those are, you know, I don't have the magic bullet for any of that, but I would say a lot of that is conversations with the adults in your household. And that includes grandma and grandpa. We've found that grandma and grandpa are a little more lenient in their choices of what they let our kids use. The television shows that my parents and my wife's parents let, it's like, what are you doing? Why are you letting them watch that? You know, walked in one day and my mom was letting our kids watch the Ellen show. And I'm like, I don't know that's the worst choice you could make, but we don't think that's probably age appropriate for, you know. So having conversations with your family members of, hey, this is in our home. This is how we do technology. Caregivers, babysitters, anybody who's helping take care of your children, you want to be consistent across all of those experiences. And so having conversations not only with the child of what the expectations are, but also having conversations with the adults as well and their peripheral as well.
Yeah, because it's not just your kids that this affects, right? It's not just your household. The fact is the technology brings in things outside of the home into the home where it didn't before, but it also takes things from the home and puts it outside the home as well, right? Or affects other people outside the home. If Eric were here, he would say that having these conversations with your children, though awkward they might be, avoids even more awkward discussions with other parents, other companies or schools. You know, if something happens and your child doesn't know what to do or is irresponsible, or maybe your child made a mistake and purposefully did something they shouldn't, now you're having to go to other parents and say, I'm sorry, we made a mistake, or my son or daughter made a mistake, or you have to go to your kid's teacher and say, oops, you know, and that gets even more awkward. So having these conversations and boundaries in place ahead of time kind of helps avoid that. Now, not always, you know, kids are kids, but it does help avoid some of those situations. And then even as adults, right, we still have to be careful. I shared with Jason earlier, I had And this kind of goes hand in hand with, it's not just what you're looking at or the games you're playing, but what you're listening to. Everything is becoming more and more social, including Fitbit, like what you're exercising in your health. You know, it's starting to get out there to your friends and your family. I was a user of Spotify for a while. I still do here and there. And one day, Nathan Rickner came up to me. He was in high school at the time. You know, I'm on worship team. He's interested in what I'm doing and listening to and kind of the people older than him on the worship team and where we're going. He comes up to me one day and he goes, "Hey, I saw you're on Spotify. I loved this band you were listening to, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "Great, that's awesome." And he walked away and I went, "Oh, he's in high school. What else am I listening to? What's his policy at home? Like, I hope I'm, you know, not, you know, can he listen to the Eagles or what, you know, whatever." I'm starting to go, what's on there? Now, I'm not listening to anything terrible. You know, I'm sure it was probably appropriate for Nathan to be looking at my Spotify, but I wasn't even aware that that was a functionality of Spotify at the time. This was several years ago. And it set off alarm bells like, oh my goodness, everything we do, we need to watch. I had another coworker one time say they found my YouTube. I don't have a YouTube channel, but they found my account and saw another, again, this happened to be music related, found another band I listened to. They're like, "I really liked that band." And I'm like, "That's great." Now, fortunately, I was aware that YouTube could do that and all that. And I had that set up to where if somebody found it, it was fine. You know, like, but we do have to be careful. We don't know who is watching. You know, they used to say that about your actions. You know, if you're standing across the room, what are you doing? Somebody's watching you. There's little eyes watching you, looking up to you. The same goes in the tech world. There's little eyes watching you, whether it's your children, your neighbor's children, your children's friends. There's little eyes watching, and so we have to model that behavior. We have to be careful. We have to be aware of what is possible and what's out there.
So is anybody feeling like, oh, crap? Great. Now what, right? You know, the reality is we're not going to turn off the internet in our home. We're probably not going to throw away all of our devices. In fact, you know, some of our children are bringing home devices from school that they've been assigned. You know, so what can we do about this, right? So we want to spend the last few minutes just providing some resources and tools that we found helpful in our homes. Like I said, I don't think I've got it all figured out. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if my kids have looked at something or seen something on some of their devices in our home that I would be like, man, I wish we wouldn't have had that happen. You know, the reality is there is a lot of place to get to a lot of places on the internet, you know, I can't control it all, right? And my friends, my kids go to their friends' houses, you know, and we've had conversations of, hey, I really don't want you watching YouTube at somebody else's house. I don't really want you looking at somebody else's phone. We're not going to watch videos and, you know, that's not what we're going to do. And we've had to have a conversation of why. And it's like, well, you know what? The neighbor, a couple houses down, their family has a different process of how they think and define things as good. But we're defining what we consider good and wholesome by God's word, and they may not have that same criteria. And so what they might find appropriate for their children to watch or do or play in their home may not be appropriate for us. And so when you're outside of our home, you're on a trampoline, you're with a basketball hoop, you're with a bicycle, but we're not on screens, you know, and that's just a pretty hard and fast rule that we have for our family. So if they want to watch a YouTube video with a friend, well, they're coming back to our house and they're watching it on the TV, not on a small screen. And when they're watching YouTube in our house, our family rule is if we don't subscribe to it, you don't search for it. And we've had to have the conversations of, guys, there is a lot of crazy stuff on YouTube, crazy stuff that mom and dad don't even really need to see. And so we're going to say, these are the channels that we think are, for the most part, a good place to stay. And you can watch anything on these channels that we subscribe to. You know, for us, it's kind of Dude Perfect is really right now the main piece of it. You know, for a while it was Mr. Beast. Mr. Beast has gotten kind of crazy for us. So we've, you know, curtailed a little bit of Mr. Beast. And so I've got 10 and 13 year old boys, right? So that's trick shots and crazy videos is kind of what they watch. But, you know, so as a family, we sit down and say, okay, here's the things that we subscribe to. And if it's outside of that, you can watch it with mom and dad, and you can watch it on the TV, but we're not going to watch it on a small screen and we're not going to watch it alone. And so I think setting some guidelines for what can we do on a small screen? What can we do on a big screen? What can we do by ourselves? And what do we need to do in the company of others is really kind of the guidelines that we've given our kids. Quite frankly, I, you know, as a young man, had my parents had that that in place for me, there I wouldn't have been looking at a lot of the stuff that I was looking at because it was on a private screen somewhere behind a closed door. If I would have been out in the living room and could have at any point in time had someone walk by and see what was on the screen, there's not a snowball's chance that I would have been watching or looking at that stuff in the living room. And so part of that is the context of the audience and the devices that we use. So I'm going to pass some books around that I've found helpful. I think the TechWise family actually is in the Resource Center. I don't know if any of the others are, but I'm going to pass a couple of these around. Dads that are raising young men, Raising Modern Day Knights is another one that's caught my attention. I'll pass these around. I'm going to write titles down. This is Be the Parent, Please by Naomi Riley. This is her tagline is stop banning seesaws and start banning Snapchat strategies for solving real parenting problems. Art of Parenting, an older book. How to Be a Hero to Your Kids, and then this is one that we're actually working through with our kids right now is Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, and just talking through, it says porn-proofing today's kids. You can't porn-proof your today's kids. They're going to come across it at some point. But, you know, really it's about how do you help them to recognize what's the problem. So if you want to pass those around, write down titles or take a look at any of those, feel free to. So, yep.
Are you going to do a Q&A today
still? Yep, yep. I have some circles to give out today, and the circle is a content filter meets screen time meets parental control. So we're going to give a few of those out. So I have more people here than I have circles, but I guess we'll give a few of those away. A couple of things. If you're not using a password manager in your home, please, please consider a password manager. If you're using the same password or a group of passwords across sites, and every password is not unique on every site that you use, please find a password manager. I'm dead serious. In this day and age, if you are not using a password manager and you're not teaching your children how to use a password manager, please stop. Currently I use LastPass. There's 1Pass, there's several others, but KeepPass. Personally, I like LastPass. And the concept behind it is you have to remember one password, and that's to log into LastPass. After that, you don't care what any of your passwords are. I literally, thousands of sites that I have logins to, I have no clue what my passwords are because they're stored in LastPass, and there are 15 to 20 character random generated passwords. And I don't care. I really don't care because LastPass logs me into all of those things. So I would encourage you, please consider using a password manager. I will tell you, getting a password manager and getting started into that, you will hate yourself for about 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it'll be a beautiful thing. But try that out. Yep.
Is there like an app for your phone?
Yeah. So I have LastPass on my phone, on my tablet, on my wife's phone, my wife's tablet, on a computer. And basically any website, any app, anything that I open, as soon as it prompts me for a login, it says, oh, this is Chase Bank. Which of these accounts do you want to log in with? I choose it and I scan my finger and it logs me in. I literally have no idea what my banking passwords are. I have no clue. I'm dead serious. For any of my banks, for any of anything, really. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care anymore what my passwords are because they're in my password manager. So a Rolodex and a sticky note are not password managers, just saying that. Content filter, we talked about that in the survey real quick. Content filter is basically a list of sites that a company thinks are safe or a genre of sites that are safe. They're not foolproof, but at my house, we have the circle, we have a content filter, and then we have another content filter on top of that. And that's just trying to keep us from stumbling across the things that we don't want to. I mean, if you want to go find nasty things on the internet, you're going to find them. It's more of a situation. I'm just trying to, when I search for something, that safe search is automatically turned on YouTube. So the videos that we do see are hopefully at least slightly filtered by YouTube. So I'm not stumbling into things that I don't want to. Google Home, Alexa, all have content filters now where you can set up family filters. It's actually voice recognition. So when my boys say, hey, Google, show me. Oh, geez, hold on. My phone's buzzing now. There we go. When you say that phrase, it'll say, hey, content filters are on. I can't play that song. Or content filters are on. I can't read you those results. And so all of the smart speakers do have content filters and family filters on them. They're kind of a pain in the rear to set up, and they're kind of a pain in the rear to turn off when you forget how you set them up. Because now the boys are like, Dad, seriously, we can't do anything. I'm like, well, you're right. It is kind of painful. There's things for other things you can use at home: OpenDNS, content filters, Cloudflare for families. You know, I would ask the question, who are your kids friending on any social media platform? Are you friending your kid on any social media platform? You know, are you stalking your kid on Facebook or on Snapchat or on Instagram? If you're not, I would encourage you to do that. For you as adults, you know, Credit Karma, where's your credit card being used? Is someone opening a credit card in your name? I had a letter come from Wells Fargo about 4 months ago. And it's like, hey, we've closed the checking account that was fraudulently opened to your name. I'm like, pardon me, what? And a debit card showed up. You know, so I had to have that conversation. So, you know, Credit Karma is a tool that I use for that. That just lets me monitor, you know, what's happening with my credit cards and for my credit score. It also alerts you when cards are being opened or accounts are being opened in your name. And then, are you backing your stuff up? Seriously, your phone is not a backup, friends. You have hundreds and thousands of pictures that you probably don't want to lose. And if you're not backing it up to iCloud or Google Photos or Amazon Photos or iDrive or OneDrive or something, you need to, the things that you care about cannot only be in one place. You know, they cannot be just on your laptop, on your tablet, on your phone. They need to be in multiple places in case it's lost, stolen, or, you know, gets deleted. So those are some of the things we wanted to cover. What questions do you guys have? Yep. So you want to talk? I don't know. I have Google Home, so
yeah, I've got Alexa. Some Alexa. Yep. The content filters. There's not a content filter specifically in the Alexa devices. There's parental controls that you can set up and say only allow, you know, through like PG material or G material, or only allow this and that. So they have parental controls where you can turn some of that on and off, but you can't like specifically say. Like for an Alexa device with a screen, you know, you can watch YouTube videos, you can browse the internet. They don't have specific, like, kind of like whitelisting, they call it, where you can say this site is okay, this site isn't. But they do have like parental controls with kind of baked in, this is what you can and can't do on it. So that's where something like the Circle or whatever will protect whatever device is on your network in your home.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I would not trust. Yeah. So the question was, what about kids YouTube? It's not foolproof by any stretch of the imagination. It is mostly up to the video publisher to say this is for kids. Granted, it's somewhat vetted. I wouldn't trust it personally. I would never just let my kid watch YouTube or search YouTube, even if it's in kids mode, even if it's on safe filters, even if it's kids or YouTube kids. There is just enough stuff on YouTube that, you know, I find that I've come across videos that I don't intend to watch, and I know exactly what I'm searching for. And so, you know, it. Personally, in our home, our kids are never just free to sit down and watch whatever they want. You know, there are set parameters of, you know, these are the movies that we can watch. These are the applications that we have on our Roku. You know, even Netflix kids filters or Disney Plus kids filters, I don't trust any of them because, quite frankly, just because media thinks that it's appropriate for kids doesn't mean it's appropriate for my kids. You know, and just some of the things that are intended for, you know, under 13 or whatever the age brackets are, I'm like, there's no way that I want my 10 or 13 year old consuming that out of the context of a conversation with me, right? Out of the context of our faith and our values and our biblical concepts. And so part of it is the screen is never a babysitter in our home for that reason, because quite frankly, I'm not trusting someone else to make those decisions for my kids. That's not to say that my kids don't watch plenty of content. We make road trips to Ohio, and pretty much the entire 6 hours, they're on their tablet watching, doing something, playing a game, right? So I'm not saying that our kids are these little, you know, anti-techno. I was the IT director here for 15 years. I live, eat, and breathe technology. My kids can solve many technology problems. They, you know, I don't, you know, my wife goes to my kids now, not me. It's kind of great. You know, quite frankly, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, we have the model family, but part of it is just thinking about who am I giving the filter to, right? Who am I allowing someone else to make a decision versus me? And so, you know, I would say YouTube Kids is a better place for kids, but I wouldn't let them, you know, run free by themselves. So I'm passing out Google Circles. circle. So this device is a device that sits in your home and is a content filter, screen time manager, parental control that basically, from our kids, we have school time set up, we homeschool. And so from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., there are only certain apps that work on their devices during those time periods. At 9 o'clock, basically the internet shuts off for them. It doesn't wake back up until about 9 o'clock in the morning. I can see what sites they've been to. I can see what sites have been blocked for them. I can see what apps have tried to launch at certain times that weren't supposed to launch. It's not the end all be all, but it's a tool that's in my tool belt to help my kids manage the technology. So in order to use, we had school off on Friday. So the kids are like, hey, we want to use our tablets. Well, they had to have a conversation with me before they start using their tablets because all they could do was math and a few other school apps because that's the only thing that's permitted during school time, with this particular device. So it's one of many. I mean, Apple has family filters, content filters. I would say know the devices that are in your home. Learn the devices that your children are using, whether it's a Chromebook, whether it's a Google tablet, whatever it is. If you don't know how to use it, it shouldn't be in the home. And I'm saying you have to be, you don't have to be at Chris's level of understanding of the technology, but understand what the device is and its capability, and then understand what filters are possible on it. If you don't, then find somebody who does and have a conversation with them. But understand the ecosystem of the devices that are in your house. There's another question around here somewhere. Yep. Yeah, you can't bring your devices in my house. There are a couple exceptions. In fact, right now there are a couple devices in my house for the kids that are watching. But for the most part, the friends in the neighborhood don't get to bring their devices over to my house. They're not on my Wi-Fi. That's just our family rule. But again, when our kids are playing with kids, it's not on devices. It's go out on the trampoline. It's go out and play. Go play basketball. Play a game. Play a board game. Do something. Tangible in our home. It's not, hey, bring your friends over and let's get on our tablets together. And so part of that's, relationally what we're encouraging our kids to do. I would say if it was a kid coming over to my house frequently, I would be having a conversation with the parent of, hey, if your kid's coming over and their device needs to be on my internet, well, in my home, devices have this on. And in fact, with this circle, when my kids' devices leave, there's a VPN that's calling home to this, meaning it's still governed by this device when they leave. So the time filters and all of those things are still happening. I know what they're looking at, even when the device is on another internet connection. So if it's somebody else's kid often coming over to my house, I'd be having a conversation of, hey, in order to use the internet at my house, this is one of the things that we do. I'd like to put this on your kid's device. I'm not just going to do it, right? Hello. But I'm going to have a conversation about that. For us, kids aren't coming over and bringing their devices because that's not why kids are coming over to our house. Now, we have a TV in our living room. It has YouTube on it. And there's a lot of YouTube and a lot of things that, but they're also, again, they're only the channels that we subscribe to. And we wouldn't be, we're not searching. Our kids and a couple friends sitting down at the couch, they're not searching on YouTube. They're simply looking at the channels, that we've already subscribed to. Yeah, I mean, Life360 is a good choice. The Circle is a good choice. I'm an Android house, so although I have several fruity devices, there are some of those things are built into Apple's devices now.
I think
Google Family, Windows has Windows Family, which. Mm-hmm. Kind of links into Xbox, so I can do screen controls and time limits on our Xbox because of their Windows Live account. So part of that's just knowing which devices you have in your house and which ecosystem they live in. But this is where I've landed, and not saying that's the only one. Bark is another one. A lot of the schools use Bark. Bark.us, I think, is the website for that one. Another question over here. Yeah. No, so most of the time, Safe Search can be enabled on a device level. some firewalls. Your firewall is usually the thing that connects to your modem in your house. Usually has some antennas for Wi-Fi. Usually some of those devices can enforce safe search, meaning basically it's Google's way of saying we're going to try our best to not let you search crap. It's not foolproof, but all of our devices have it enabled by default. So at least it's one more step you got to kind of go through to get there. And it says across the top, you know, Google Safe Search is on. Do you want to bypass it and go look at the rest of the results? Well, you know, you don't, but.
Yeah, that's where it comes down to. Yeah, that's where it comes down to having the conversation, setting the boundaries, because even at our level, we know a lot, but we also know there's a lot of ways around it. There's a lot of ways to have accidents. Texting, if your child has a device for texting, you can't block that. You know, their friend or their acquaintance or somebody at school can send them something you don't want them to see, and you can't necessarily stop that from happening. So having the conversation, what do you do when you see that or when you receive that? You need to have those conversations and those rules in place to handle it, because there's going to be ways around it, or there's going to be a safe search that doesn't work how you thought it was going to.
There's actually a way now on the iPhone to whitelist who can call your kid and who can text your kid. So I mean, it's kind of painful to set up, but the call doesn't even exist and the text doesn't even exist if they're outside of that whitelist. I know you for sure you can do an iPhone. I don't know.
And you can do that on Alexa devices and stuff too. Say if you enable the communication, you can say who can and can't communicate.
I was wondering, on screen time and maybe the consensus, what is a daily screen time that most people use at what ages? And then also, do you count everything's screen time? If they're watching the Brady Bunch on TV, is that the same as playing Minecraft on a tablet? And also, what age do the most let their kids start carrying a cell phone, and you restrict it to just being able to call, no internet?
Yeah.
Is there a way you can do that?
Yeah, so the question's around screen time. One of the stats that I came across is the average adult is in front of a screen 8 hours a day, and that average goes up to 16 hours a day for children and young adults. I can't fathom letting our kids on it for 16 hours. But I think that's something to be decided in your house is what counts as screen time. Does school count as screen time? Does watching a television program at the end of the day count as screen time? Or is it just tablet or phone? And I think, you know, part of that's judgment call within the home. You know, we try to keep our kids on Xbox less than 6 hours in a given day. That's where the threshold is. And that very rarely happens. That's usually on Sunday afternoon where dad's been at work all day, mom's doing a couple things, and, you know, maybe the boys are playing a couple games with some friends. They may hit that 6 hour limit one day a week and not every day. But, you know, 10 and 13. You know, I think that's, for me, I would say if my kids were on it 6 hours a day, that's too much personally. You know, once a week, maybe. And that's really, it's a reward earned, you know, and it's a currency in our house that, hey, you've gotten everything done. Your laundry is done. You've made your bed. You've had a great week at school. This is a privilege that we're giving you, for these couple of hours. You know, the flip side of that is, you know, during the week, during school, outside of, school apps, it's maybe an hour or two for our kids on screen time. If you don't count, watching Mandalorian or something like that as a family in the evening, you know, which I personally don't count, you know, watching a show together as a family has screen time, probably should, but I don't. But, you know, part of that is, I think you've got to figure out what's healthy in your home. You know, when is it, in my mind, screen time's a problem when it's impacting the things that they should be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, if the things in life aren't getting done because of this, it's a problem. So that could be 15 minutes in some homes. That could be an hour in some homes. That could be.
Yeah. Young kids, it's not just privileges and getting everything done. It's that they should be out maybe catching the ball, running the kids.
Sure. Yeah. So the question is about developmental, and absolutely. I mean, yes. What's the number? I don't have a magic number.
Yeah. And your eyes and being sedentary, sitting for, you know, so even if maybe they went to school and then they're on a tablet reading a book and then you have TV time later, great, but take breaks between, you know, and maybe tell your child, hey, I am letting you watch TV, even though you stared at a screen for 8 hours with school, but it's maybe relaxing your mind today, or it's storming outside, so we're going to let you just kind of chill on the couch. Maybe it's nice today, the next day, and you say, nah, today we're not going to do TV time. You've put in 2 days of school, and you read a book on there, or you played a little game. Now go outside. You know, you need to run around, get your heart pumping, get your eyes off the screen, whatever it might be. So, yeah, and I do, like, my three-year-olds, we count total screen time. TV, and if they put a, if their brother shows them something on the tablet, we count total screen time for three-year-olds because we want them to not be in front of a screen. My eight-year-old, he'll do a little bit of school maybe. He'll watch his cartoon or something, and then maybe we'll let him play a little Minecraft with my supervision and locked down. He doesn't get to play with all online with all his friends. He's just building on Minecraft. But we do have kind of reasons why he's doing each one and different time limits for different activities for him at eight. And it's a little bit more than the three-year-olds get for those developmental reasons.
Can YouTube be locked down to prevent searching, but still allow the channels you want, or is that just
not, thing? Yeah.
I haven't found a way to turn search off on YouTube. So, all right, that's all we got time for, guys. I've got five more circles to give away, so if you need one in your home, come up and grab one. Hope this has been helpful for you guys.